My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 18th podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it in October of 2008, and the title is What Your Money or Your Life Taught Me About Investing. Your Money or Your Life is a best-selling personal finance book. It changed the history of saving, and we're still living. The book came out a long time ago, but the book still sells large quantities, and we're still living the influence of that book written by Joe Dominguez. And it's the most important personal finance book I've ever read. It certainly changed my life, but I'm far from the only one. If you go on the internet today and you look for advice on how to save money, you will come across thousands of blogs and on saving today. And a large percentage of those were heavily influenced by Joe Dominguez's book, Your Money or Your Life. And there's a reason why. What goes on is there are not many good books out on saving, in existence on saving. But Joe Dominguez's book is the real thing. It's not a collection of saving tips. What it really is a way of changing how you think about money. And I believe that's really what you need to become an effective saver. And I have not done any podcast on saving as of yet, but I do intend to get around to that. At some point, take a break from the investing topic and do some on saving. I think that would be great. But anyway, the book Your Money or Your Life is a hugely influential book. I can't go into all of what it says on this podcast, but there is an article about the book at my website under the book I read section of the site, and there's lots and lots of materials on the internet on Your Money or Your Life if you don't know what it's all about. But Your Money or Your Life is not a book that people turn to for investing advice. It's a book that people turn to for saving advice. And right now, the focus of my podcast so far has been investing. And the reason for that is that I believe that we are living through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. So I think that's where the need is. People need advice about saving, to be sure. But people really, really, really need advice about investing. And more people need advice about saving. But there's a lot of material out today on saving. There's very little good material out on investing, unfortunately. There's good material out for the sophisticated investors. There's lots of good material for the sophisticated investors. But for the average middle-class investor, what passes for investing expertise today is a sorry bunch of material, in my opinion. There's good stuff mixed in with bad stuff, but the ultimate advice that is usually given is usually something along the lines of the passive investing model, where people are just told, put your money in stocks and leave it there. Never think again. Just turn off your brain. And boy, is that bad advice. That's going to crush people, and it's in the process of crushing people as we speak. So that's where I've put my focus. But Your Money and Your Life is a book that had a huge influence on me. Every word at my website is in at least one important sense the product of that book, because never would I have started writing about money topics if I had not been influenced by that book to change my own money management program. But as I said, it's not an investing book. There is a chapter on investing in Your Money or Your Life. Generally, that chapter gets poor reviews. I have seen it criticized. I have seen it ridiculed. I share some of the criticism about halfway, but I also see a lot good in that chapter on investing. My belief is that Joe Dominguez, I think Joe Dominguez is the ultimate genius on money management. I can't possibly overstate his influence on me, but He didn't solve the investing question the way he did the saving question. I wish he had gone back and written a book on investing. That would have been wonderful. But he got halfway there. He could see that there was a problem with the conventional advice, and he rejected the conventional advice, to be sure. So he got halfway there, but the solution he put forward was a poor solution, in my assessment, and there are many who agree with me on that. What Joe Dominguez said was, first, I'll give you a little bit of the background of how he came up with his investing ideas. Joe, he worked on Wall Street, so he was well aware of the conventional investing advice. A lot of people will mock his investing. Joe is basically anti-stock. That's the reason he's ridiculed. And, you know, we've recently lived through the hugest bull market in the history of the United States. So there are many people who are not entirely open to a variety of viewpoints on investing today, unfortunately. And Joe's viewpoint was very anti-stock. But people make it sound as if he's simply uninformed, and I don't get that impression at all. I not only read the book, but I listened to a set of tapes that had Joe Dominguez speaking, and some of the information I'll be putting forward is information I gathered from the tapes, not necessarily from the book. But the reason that Dominguez rejected the conventional investing approach is that he worked on Wall Street. He knew the conventional approach, and he tried the conventional approach. What he was trying to do with his money was not to retire at age 65. He wanted to retire from corporate work early in his life so that he could devote his life to working on environmental causes. And I believe he retired at age 39. So he obviously retired very early. And the way in which he did that was by obviously focusing on frugality much more than most people do. But what made him focus on frugality was his goal. He wasn't aiming for an age 65 retirement. He was aiming to be able to do this environmental work, which is what really excited him. That was really his passion in life. So the goal is what produced the saving effort. Most people, the conventional advice has it backwards. The conventional advice tries to give you all sorts of saving tips, but they ignore the goal, and they just assume that your goal is an age 65 retirement. My belief is that if your goal is an age 65 retirement, it's all but impossible to save effectively. That's the reason why most of us don't save. We're pursuing the wrong goal. And Dominguez pursued a different goal and had very, very different results than people have when they're following the conventional goal. So he was aiming to leave the workplace at an early age, at age 39. But he had been putting his plan together for some years and had been saving for some years. And he actually tried. He came close to leaving his corporate employment earlier than he did. I don't know exactly how many years earlier. My sense is that it was at about at age 35. And the problem he ran into is, the first time around, he was following the conventional investing advice, which meant, I don't know what his percentage stock allocation was, but he was invested in stocks, which is the conventional advice, that you should be invested in stocks. The problem, of course, with stocks is that stocks are highly volatile. So what happened to Joe is, as he got close to the point where he wanted to leave his employment and go off and live this second life of working in nonprofit organizations for environmental causes, is he lost a big part of his financial freedom stash. I don't know how much he lost, but this was in the mid-1960s, I believe. So at the mid-1960s, stocks were extremely high priced, not as high as they have been in recent years, but in historical terms, it was one of those three times when we've been at extremely high stock prices. And I've mentioned on numerous occasions, the three times we've gone to high stock prices in the past, we've seen an average price drop of 68% in the years following. We're now going through the fourth time. So Joe learned his lesson. That's why he gives the investing advice he does. It's not because he's uninformed. He's perfectly well informed, but he had a bad experience. He followed the conventional advice. It failed. And to set back his retirement by 5 or 10 years or whatever it was going to be, to him was a very big deal. because he was trying to achieve retirement in a very short amount of time. And the conventional investing advice just does not work, no way, no how, for those pursuing an early retirement. And that was what I learned reading Joe Dominguez's book. At the time I read his book, I was putting together my own plan for early retirement. I was really in the very early stages when I read Joe's book. Joe's book is the thing that really got me moving forward at a much quicker pace. But I was trying to think through my own ideas. What am I going to do about investing? And when I read his experience, I took it very seriously because I have such great respect for his work. And it does make sense. It makes perfect sense what Dominguez is saying about stocks, the downside, that the passive investing model, which is the dominant model today, the conventional advice on investing, the passive investing model, I am a harsh critic of it, but the truth is, if you're going to hold stocks for 30 years, the conventional model works. If you buy stocks today, stocks are very overpriced today, and that's why I would argue you should have a small stock allocation today, not a large stock allocation. But If you're not going to touch that money, if there's nothing you need that money for until 30 years down the road, passive investing is fine. It does work for that person. I've never met anybody who didn't care what the size of their portfolio was for 30 years. That's my problem with it. I think it's totally unrealistic, totally unsuited for the world we live in, where we use our money to advance through life, whether, you know, how much money you have saved determines all kinds of things. It determines whether you can start a business on your own. It determines, you know, whether you can send your kids to college. It determines how financially secure you feel about having children. It influences every aspect of your life. What size house you're going to buy. So to say, oh, I don't care, you know, what my net worth is until 30 years down the road, just strikes me as absurd. It's completely absurd. It has no connection with reality. What Joe focused on is that this 68% drop. He didn't talk about the 68% drop, but that's what he was getting at. It's the volatility of stocks. If you buy stocks at today's price, anytime the PE10 level is 20 or above, you're buying an asset class that is likely to experience a price drop of 68%. So if you had $1 million saved, which is a lot of money, not too many people have $1 million saved, but say you did, you could wake up one day a couple years from now and have only $350,000. How can you plan an early retirement not knowing whether you have $1 million in net worth or $350,000 in net worth? It's impossible. You have to have some idea what the realities are. You have to know, what do I really own? Do I really own $1 million? Or do I really own $350,000? Or is it something in between? And that's what the rational investing model aims to tell you. All of the material at my website is rooted in the rational investing model. And the purpose, the reason why I developed this model, it was originally for my own purposes. I wanted to put together an early retirement plan, and it can't be done unless you know that the numbers have some stability to them. You don't need to know exactly. You know, you don't need to be able to say, okay, it's nominally $1 million, but the real value is $439,732.68. You don't have to get to that level of precision, but you need to know roughly. If you have $1 million, do you really have $1 million? Or do you really have $350,000? Or do you really have $600,000? Or do you really have $1.5 million? You know, if valuations are low, you should be counting that million as more than $1 million. Because when valuations are low, you're not going to have a 68% price drop on your stocks. When valuations are low, the average annual return on a going forward basis is 17% real. So you've really got more than $1 million. You've got $1 million with the potential to produce amazing returns over the following 10 years. So in a realistic sense, you have more than $1 million. But at other times, at times when prices are sky high, you've really only got something like $500,000. And you're probably going to have a drop down to $350,000. And then it will move back up to the $500,000 range. because the $350,000, when you have that 68% price drop, it's usually an overreaction. You're seeing more of a drop than was really necessary or required. But unless you look at the numbers, unless you look at the historical data, how do you know any of this? I had to figure all this out for myself. Nobody told me. I had a lot of people help. You know, Robert Shiller, obviously, John Walter Russell, obviously, Rob Arnott, and, you know, on and on and on. Lots of people provided important clues. But ultimately, the reason I got into this is just, it was just, I want to put together a plan that makes sense. I want to hand in a resignation from a high-paying corporate job, and I don't dare do it unless I have some idea what my assets are worth. And reading the conventional media, what they have to say about how to invest, you could never figure it out. It just goes around and around in circles. They just say, you know, stocks for the long run, passive investing, don't time the market. It's all just marketing slogans. There's no substance there. So I feel you have to know the numbers. And I think that's what Dominguez was getting at. And where I think Dominguez got off track, where I very strongly believe he got off track, but perhaps if he had studied the issue longer, he would have figured this out. I think he would have. I think if he had written a separate book on investing, he would have gotten it right. But he just, at the time he wrote his book, he didn't really intend to write a book. What he really did was he wanted to do his environmental work, and some people said to him, how is it you got to do this so early in life? And he sort of, you know, gave a little lecture on it, and then the notes got typed up and it turned into a book, but he wasn't really in the book writing business at that point, and I don't think he wanted to be bothered to write a book about investing. But I wish he had. But what Dominguez needed was a way to invest so that you know what you have, at least in a rough sense. You know, at least you have a neighborhood number. You can't plan an early retirement if you don't know whether you have a million or 500,000 or 350,000 or 1.5 million. It just doesn't work. So what he ended up recommending was buying treasury bonds. And treasury bonds, his argument was basically that treasury bonds are stable. They're backed by the U.S. government. The only way you're going to lose your investment is if the U.S. government goes bankrupt. So he felt this was a stable investment. So he could save his money if he had money coming in from treasury bonds, enough to cover his expenses, he could afford to turn in a resignation. So the logic of his entire approach fit. There is a big problem with it, though. And the big problem is treasury bonds do not provide a high enough return for most people to be able to afford an early retirement. That's the failing. I believe that the middle-class investor must be invested in stocks. The return is so much greater. I was not willing to give up stocks. In other words, I read what Dominguez had to say, and I was greatly influenced. I love Joe Dominguez, but I could not swallow the idea of not being invested in stocks. The long-term track record of stocks is just too good, that I'd be giving up years of financial freedom if I were to invest in treasury bonds. Now, the way he got around that is that he said, well, ignore inflation. He said, take the rate of return you get from the treasury bond, and just ignore inflation and just count that as your return. And that's just dangerous. That just does not make sense. Inflation is a real thing. And, if you have a treasury bond paying 7% and inflation is 4%, you're really only getting a return of 3%. And if you start kidding yourself into thinking you're getting a return of 7%, you're kidding yourself. It's not real. So I cannot buy that bit of advice. I think that's terrible advice. But his quest, what Dominguez was searching for, was very understandable and very healthy and very, very much needed. We need a way, middle-class people need a way to invest in stocks that makes stocks more stable than they are when you invest in them according to the passive investing model. And that is what rational investing aims to be. What I have always tried to do from the first day of our discussions The discussions on at the retire early boards and the indexing boards began in May of 2002. Even before that, this was my goal. I had these binders, you know, in my house where I would, this is the days before the internet. Now I collect things, you know, I collect the articles and, you know, just pull them off the internet. But in those days, I used to Xerox, you know, articles from magazines or books or wherever it was, and staple them together and put them in binders. But the goal was always, how am I going to get a stable return while also being heavily invested in stocks? I wanted the best of both worlds. That's really what I wanted. And I believe I've achieved that. I believe if you look at the rational investing model, the valuation-informed indexing approach to investing that I describe at my site, I believe it is the best of both worlds. I believe we've done it with the help of a lot of, you know, hundreds of community members, and especially John Walter Russell. But I believe we've done it. But that's the goal. The important thing here is that was what Dominguez was driving at, even if he didn't fully get there. Now, and of course, the way you do that, the way you stabilize your stock return, it's not that hard. It's not that complicated. People, I think the biggest problem I have selling people on the investing ideas that I have is that they sound too good to be true. People look at it and they say, well, Rob, you're telling us we can get a stable return from stocks while also getting the high return that stocks provides. Isn't that a little too good to be true? If you could really do that, wouldn't there be lots and lots of people recommending this? Well, there should be. You can do it. There's, you know, the evidence is very, very strong. All of this approach is based on historical data. But it does require giving up the appeal of the passive investing model. And the passive investing model says, keep your same high stock allocation at all times, no matter how high prices go. And see, that's how you get into trouble. The reality of stocks is, stocks, I don't know, 70-80% of the time are offer a fantastic long-term value proposition, the best available to the middle-class investor. But 20-30% of the time, when prices go sky high, they offer a terrible long-term value proposition, just a bone-crushing long-term value proposition. You don't want to be heavily invested in stocks at times when they're priced where they are today and where they have been priced for, you know, going back 14 years now. Stocks have offered a poor value proposition for 14 years now, going back to 1994. And of course, that's how Dominguez got ruined in his first attempt at early retirement. He followed the conventional route, but of course, it just happened to be a time when stock prices were out of control, and he paid for it. And he learned his lesson, and he said never again. He overreacted. My opinion is that Dominguez overreacted to his negative personal experience. What he did, and of course, so many investors do this. I believe that 90% of the people advocating passive investing today, when prices get low enough that they sell, which is what they will ultimately do if the future is anything at all, like it's always been in the past, they will sell at very low prices, and they will swear off stocks. They'll say, never again in my lifetime will I own stocks. And they'll tell their children, and they'll tell their children to tell their grandchildren. Because when you get burned, when you invest in stocks at the prices they've been at in recent years, you never forget. You never forget what you lived through. What the rational investor aims to do is to soften that hit. He lowers his stock allocation at times of sky-high prices so that maybe he takes a hit, but it's not a bone-crushing hit, and he recovers. And then when stocks are priced for a good long-term return, once again, well, then he goes heavily into stocks once again. In other words, the risk of stocks is all concentrated in 20% of the time when people hold stocks. It's that 20% when the PE10 value is above 20 that stocks are super risky. But the rest of the time, stocks are really not that risky an asset class. The risk of stocks is greatly exaggerated as a rule. But it's not exaggerated for passive investors. Passive investors have no idea how risky stocks are. They're going to get killed. But for rational investors, stocks are just not that risky an asset class. You can get the long-term return of stocks without taking on this absurd level of risk that passive investors are asked to take on. So now that's sort of part one of this podcast. That's That's what Joe Dominguez recommends, why I think he's half right and why I think he's half wrong. But there's a more important point, a more subtle point that Dominguez makes, and it's not in the chapter on investing. It's the core point of his book, and I've never seen the core point of Dominguez's book applied to the investing realm. And that's what I'm trying to do in the book that I'm writing, to take Dominguez's ideas about saving and apply them in the investing realm. Dominguez's core idea on saving is just so simple that it's amazing that no one thought about it. And I'm sure people did think about it. I'm sure people said it in other forms, but he gets the credit anyway, because he's the one that said it when I could hear it and when millions of other people who have read his book could hear it. So Dominguez properly gets the credit. But his message was, when you look at money, don't think about it as lots of pieces of paper with green writing, you know, scribbled all over it. That's not what money is. That's how we think about it. We hold it and we, you know, we count it and we sort of disdainfully let it slip through our hands. We say, oh, it's boring. You know, budgets are boring. Well, they're not boring if you start thinking about money for what it really is. And Dominguez tells us what it really is. Money. How do you get money? That's how he looks at it. Not what does it look like when you're holding it in your hand. He says, how do you get money? The answer is, you go to a job. And what does that mean? Going to a job means you give up control of your life decisions, for 8 hours a day. You give up control of your life. You trade your life energy for dollar bills. That's what's really happening. That's what is really happening. Money is not green pieces of paper. Money is your life. You've traded your life for it, so it's essentially your life. And if you value money, if you accumulate money, you regain control of your life. You no longer, if you have money in the bank, you no longer have to trade your time for dollar bills. You're now free to take your time and devote it to things you care about, whether it's environmental causes or, you know, writing about personal finance, which is what I choose to do with my time, or, you know, any of a thousand other goals. Whatever turns you on is what you spend your time on, not what turns your employer on, which is what you're spending your time on now. It's what turns you on. You become the master of your fate. That's what saving money is about. And that, for me, just changed me overnight from being a poor saver, somebody who never saved money, to being, you know, one of the best savers in the history of the world, because I wanted my time. I wanted to reclaim my time, my life. If I'm going to do things with my life, I need to have control of my time. And, of course, time is running out for all of us. It's a limited thing. The days are going by. You know, learn how to save effectively, and you reclaim your life as your own. Okay, that's what he says in the saving area. The problem I have, and as I say, this idea has caught on. It's not, by no means is everybody out there following it. Obviously, we still have a big saving problem. We have a big problem with overconsumption. So it's not that everyone's following Joe Dominguez, but there's a frugality movement that is alive today, and it's very much alive on the internet. Lots of blogs where people talk about this. And, you know, if we're heading into hard economic times, which appears it appears that that may be the case, I think the frugality movement's going to be bigger. People are going to realize, hey, I was bringing in good money for a number of years. Where am I now? I'm now scared to death I'm going to lose my job. I'm scared I'm going to lose my house. I'm scared I'm going to lose my car. You know, why am I scared? You know, isn't there a better way to live my life so that when I bring in good money the next time, I won't have to live in fear? And the answer is there is. It's called effective saving. You know, I call it passion saving. You know, I wrote a book about it. My book is an extension of Joe Dominguez's ideas, heavily influenced by Joe Dominguez. I took his ideas and tried to apply them to a lot of people who have goals other than pursuing environmental causes. That's a fine goal, but it's not a goal that turns everybody on. So I sort of tried to take Dominguez's idea and blow it up. Now, what we don't have today is an equivalent movement on the investing side. We have it on the saving side, at least it exists. I'd like it to be stronger, but it exists. On the investing side, no. There are tons of investing blogs, but almost all of them follow some angle on the conventional approach. There are passive investing blogs, that follow what Bogle says, and there are value investing blogs that follow what Buffett says, and there are technical analysis blogs that, where people watch for patterns, and there are all these sorts of things. There are blogs on investing in bonds or investing in gold or whatever it happens to be. But what we need is an approach to investing that parallels Dominguez's and mine approach to saving. We need to take that idea that money is not a green, it's not green pieces of paper. It's slices of your life energy. And we need to apply that to the investing area. And when you do that, everything changes. Everything changes. One of the pieces of advice that you hear all the time from people following the conventional passive investing model is you'll hear young people, and they will say, "Oh, they might only have a small amount saved. Maybe they've saved $10,000." And they say, "I'm worried about the market. It's hard for me to save anything. I'm not making a lot of money. Most of us, when we start out, we aren't making a lot. So I've managed to save 10,000 or 20,000, but I don't want to lose it." And the advice will come back, "Oh, don't worry about it. You're so young. Even if you lose it, it's no big deal. Put it in the market. Put it in the stock market. Oh, stocks for the long run." They go through all the marketing slogans. Well, we're talking about $10,000. If the question was, should that individual make the effort to save $10,000 or should he not? You'd get a very different story, wouldn't you? If a young person says, "I'm 25, I'm 30, should I, I have a lot of things I'd like to spend money on, but I guess I could save 10,000, but should I bother?" The answer would be, "Yes." And what would they say? They'd say, "Save $10,000 when you're 25 or when you're 30, and that money will compound. It'll grow and grow." And Einstein said compounding is the eighth wonder of the universe. And they bring out these calculators and they say, "Put aside $10,000 when you're 25, and you'll have 817 trillion, by the time you're 60." So they put this heavy push to save, and to a large extent, properly so. Compounding is real. Compounding is amazing. It's totally counterintuitive. None of us can believe how much your money can compound. But if you look at the math, if you take it line by line, you'll see it really does work. Well, guess what? Compounding works in reverse too. If you lose $10,000 because you were too lazy, and I'm going to use that term, intellectually lazy, and I don't mean that my listeners are intellectually lazy, but the people pushing the passive investing model encourage intellectual laziness on a daily basis. So let's say that the marketing slogans have pushed through and you've bought into them. And you say, "Oh, yeah, it doesn't seem like I should leave my money in stocks, but I guess I will. Everybody thinks it's a good idea. I'll let it ride." Fine. You didn't just lose $10,000. You lost $10,000 plus all of the compounding you would have obtained from holding that money till the time you're, from the time you're 30 to the time you're 65. You lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. You lost a lot of money. you changed your life in a dramatic way, and for no reason whatsoever, in a negative way. Losing money matters whether you're young, old, middle-aged, retired, starting out, whatever. Losing money is a bad thing. And investing in stocks when they are overpriced is a real good way to lose money. It's a real quick method. Joe Dominguez would be aghast at the investing advice given to people today. Joe Dominguez is dead, unfortunately. But Joe Dominguez, if he heard the investing advice being given today, I think he'd be sick to watch people leaving their money in stocks at times when they have been at the highest price levels in history, when the danger of stocks has been just off the scale. And we have people who purport to be experts. They purport to know something about stocks. And they're telling people, oh, leave, you know, no need to change your allocation. Just stick with that. Stick with that 70% stock allocation. See how it works out. My message is, here's what I learned from Your Money or Your Life about investing. What Your Money or Your Life taught me about investing is those dollars that I invest are not green pieces of paper. They are little slices of my life. That means I care what happens to them. Now, you know, I mentioned that Joe Dominguez's insight on saving was very simple, but it was important because it was so fundamental. Well, the insight I have just put forward, I believe, is similarly simple, but similarly important because it is so fundamental. If you care about your money, you're not going to invest it passively. No way, no how. Passive investing was developed in the marketing departments of Wall Street. And the reason, you know, it sells, it's effective marketing for two reasons. One is that we all have a get-rich-quick impulse, and passive investing plays right into that. Another is that we're all naturally lazy. We don't want to have to think about our money. We should be thinking about our money because we can change the quality of our life by spending a little time thinking about our money, but we don't want to. And the marketing departments are playing right into that, and they're saying, oh, be passive. Passive is smart. That's what they're telling us. Passive is smart. Passive is sophisticated. All the cool people are passive, but they're not. The really cool people are the people who care about what happens to their money. And if you care about what happens to your money, you're going to take the little bit of time and effort it takes to figure out, do I really have $1 million? Or do I really have $350,000? Or do I really have $500,000? Or do I really have $1.5 million? Because only when you know the answer to that question can you hope to put together an effective investing strategy. It can't be done any other way. That's the ABCs. If you don't know what you have, you cannot put together an intelligent plan. Period. And passive investors don't know what they have. Deliberately, that's the strategy. The strategy is, there was a guy at the Vanguard Diehards board. You know, some of the stuff is comical at some point. It's sad. It's painfully sad, but it's also comical in its way. And if you don't laugh at it, you'll go crazy. But there's a guy there, Chin Whiskers, I think is his name, Chin Whiskers. And he quite openly, he's a huge passive investing advocate, but quite openly he says, I am a know-nothing investor. That's what he calls himself. I'm a know-nothing investor. And they applaud. They think that's great. Not everybody, but the leaders of that board, they applaud. A know-nothing investor. That's something to be proud of. Not in my book. Now, my investing approach is easy to understand. I aim for simplicity. I deliberately avoid lots of complexities because I feel that you know, I have other things to do with my life. I don't want to spend all my life studying investing. And I think the people that listen to my stuff have better things to do with their life. So a lot of the complexity that people get involved in just isn't necessary. But I would never say that I'm a know-nothing investor. The way I would put it is I am a know-a-little-something investor. I'm not a know-everything investor, certainly. But I want to know enough to invest effectively. And to say that you're a know-nothing investor is like putting your fingers in your ears, putting blinders on your eyes, and putting your head in the sand. You're announcing right up front, not only do I not know, I'm proud of it. I don't want to know. And that, you know, one thing I'll say for Chin Whiskers is he tells it straight with that line that he's a know-nothing investor. That's what he is. That's what all passive investors are. They are know-nothing investors by choice. It's deliberate. What saddens me is that I don't think most middle-class investors really get that. Most are just sort of following what they read, and they think they're awed by these experts, all the big words they use and all the slogans that get drilled into their heads and all the charts and the tables. And they think these people know so much more than me, I better go along with what they say. And that's the worst mistake you can make. Because, you know, they have their own agendas. And they have their own issues with understanding investing. A lot of times people use charts and tables not because they're smart, and big words, not because they're smart, but because they're trying to look smart. They're trying to appear smart. And I mean no disrespect to the investing experts. This always comes up, but I've learned from all of them. Every expert that I've ever mentioned on any of these podcasts or in the articles on my site is somebody I've learned something significant from. I don't think there's ever been a time when I've talked about somebody who I felt, you know, was worthless. You know, if I felt they were worthless, I'm not going to talk about them. I'm not going to waste my time reading them. If I get the idea they have nothing to offer, I just close the book. So if I talk about them, it means there's something there. But I will often talk about, you know, the good side and the weak side. And know-nothing investing ain't where it's at. You don't need to know a lot. You don't need to spend a lot of time. But you need to care about your money. You need to care about whether you're going to gain money or lose money. And if you care, you've got to know how much your portfolio is worth. And if you're not looking at valuations, you don't know what your portfolio is worth today. You don't own. You know, you can look at the bottom line on the last page of your portfolio statement. It'll say you own X. And I don't care what the number is. If it's 2,000 or 20,000 or 200,000, that number's inaccurate. Because that number is not adjusted for valuations. And the way stocks work is valuations puff up the value temporarily, and then the return to reality puffs it back down again. And so unless you know how much puffery is in that number, you don't know where you stand. And you can't make any effective investing decisions or really any effective money management decisions. You can't even decide how much to spend for a car if you don't know how much you have in your investment portfolio. Because that's a factor. How much you have saved should influence how much you're willing to spend on a car or a vacation or a house. All sorts of things. How can you make an intelligent decision if you don't know how much you have? But if you follow passive investing, you don't know because you don't care about valuations. So what I learned from Joe Dominguez is, what I really learned is that you need to care about your money. It's money is a slice of your life energy. It's what you are. And think about, we talk about investing and why is it? You know, I say you have to have stocks. Why is it you need to have stocks? It's because stocks provide a higher return. Why do they provide a higher return? Because the risk is higher. You're being compensated for taking on added risk. That's why stocks provide a higher return. That's why I say you have to have stocks. What is it you're putting at risk when you buy stocks? It's not green pieces of paper. It's your life. It's your ability to make of your life what you want to make of it. That's what's at risk. And when you lose 68% of that, you lose opportunities. Your life options are diminished. This is why I am opposed to passive investing. What I say is that you should look at the historical data. You should try to get a sense of what your portfolio is really worth. And then you should make investing decisions in accord with that. If the long-term value propositions of stock is high, well, you should own a lot of stocks. You should go with a high stock allocation, 70, 80%. If the long-term value proposition of stocks is low, you should go with a low stock allocation, 20 or 30%. And if it's in the middle, maybe you go with 60%, 65%, whatever, you know. There is no one number. It depends on your personal circumstances and it depends on your risk tolerance. But it has to be valuation adjusted. If the numbers you're using are not valuation adjusted, the numbers are not real. You're living in a fantasy world. And the people that sell you stocks are happy to see you live in that fantasy world. Just think of how other industries would feel if only they could persuade us, if they could sell us the same line that the stock sellers have sold us. Don't you think the car dealers would love to have a book come out called Cars for the Long Run that would tell people, buy cars all the time. It's never a bad idea to buy a new car. Buy as many as you can. Buy them all the time. Don't worry about the price. Price doesn't matter. Don't you think the book selling industry would love you to fall for that one? Or the house selling industry? Or any industry that exists? You shouldn't fall for it when you're buying stocks. And I think the protection from falling for it, I often ask myself, why is it that so many others fell for it? Even aspiring early retirees, even people that post at retire early boards fell for this. You know, a good number of them. Why? And I didn't. You know, why? Am I so smart? No, I'm not smarter than these people. That I know. Certainly not smarter than people like John Bogle and, you know, Bill Bernstein and all these others. But I care more about my money. They may, you know, I care more about my money. Everybody cares about his or her own money more than anybody else. I care about my money because of what I want to do with my life. So when it came time for me to putting together a retirement plan, I didn't just enter retirement planning tool into Google and see what popped up and then just say, oh, 4%, fine, duh, put in 4%. No, I checked it out. I checked out the methodology of those studies and I found that they left a lot to be desired. And now ultimately, I went on my discussion board community and I said, can anybody help me develop a better methodology? And John Walter Russell came along and he did it. And now we've got a calculator at the website, the Retirement Risk Evaluator, where you can get accurate numbers to plan your retirement, not this passive investing jizz-jazz. You can get the real thing. So it all comes down to caring. And most people don't think of your money or your life as an investing book. But if you get that lesson out of it, if you get the lesson that's at the center of that book that Joe Dominguez was trying to teach us, your money is your life. Your money is the thing you trade your life energy for. If you get that, and if it hits, and if it convinces you, and if you start to live it on a deep level, you will never invest the same again. You will never fall for this trickery again. You will care about your money. You will take the little bit of time it takes to learn how to invest rationally. And it's not that hard. And then every day, that message will get reinforced as you grow more and more confident that you know what you're doing, which passive investors never have that feeling. They can never have that feeling because the whole thing is based on close your eyes, put your fingers in your ears, put your head in the sand. And that's the, you know, I can tell you that's the reaction I've gotten from many passive investors. When I tell them what the historical data says about the effect of valuations on long-term returns, the answer you get, you know, there's all sorts of variations, but they're all excuses. They're, oh, maybe it'll be different this time, or oh, you know, if stocks go down, I'll get by somehow, you know, or oh, I'm young, I'll recover, you know. Well, yeah, you will in 30 years. In 30 years, you'll recover. You're going to give up 30 years of your life because you couldn't take a weekend? to study how valuations affect long-term returns? That makes sense? It doesn't make sense to me, and I don't think it would have made sense to Joe Domingo. Good luck with your investing strategy.